Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, July 6th, 2023. Facing budget restrictions, City of Marfa selects new health insurance for employees. By H. Catching Margino. HCMARGINOT at MINERS.UTEP.EDU. Marfa. In light of budgetary concerns and rising health insurance costs, Marfa City Council last week voted to replace its current plan for city employees with a more frugal option, which will implement higher out-of-pocket costs for workers. The new plan will see higher out-of-pocket costs for employees with an increase in deductibles from $500 to $1,000 for in-network providers and $1,000 to $2,000 for out-of-network providers. It's an unfortunate byproduct of the switch, acknowledged City Manager Mandy Roan. But keeping the current plan would place a financial strain on the city budget, she said. That would have meant a cost increase of around $125,000, roughly 30% costlier than in previous fiscal year. I think sticking with the current plan we have is probably not feasible, said Ron at Thursday's meeting. $125,000 is a lot of money to come up with. The new plan, meanwhile, would be roughly half the price. While the new plan means deductible increases for employees, coinsurance would remain the same, and copays would remain at $30 for office visits and $60 for specialists. Terry Torres, benefits coordinator for the City of Marfa, explained to the council that the cost of insurance was increasing as city employees aged and required more medical care. Not just City of Marfa employees, but employees of other cities within the district with whom Marfa is grouped. Number one is our aging workforce, Torres said. We have a good retention rate with our employees, but most of us are getting older. The second primary factor, she explained, was a roughly 80% increase in cancer treatment among employees in the district pool. The sharp increase was due to a lag in cancer diagnoses during the pandemic, she said. Torres, while acknowledging the city's current health insurance was the top-tier plan offered, presented council with four options that would be more affordable for the city. Weighing costs and benefits, council ultimately voted for the plan they felt would have a minimal negative impact on employees while saving the city money. The new plan has a minimal increase in out-of-pocket and deductible costs for employees without too large of an increase for the city, Roan explained. Instead of a 30% increase for keeping this year's plan, we are looking at 16.5%. The increase in insurance costs for Marfa are in line with predicted national trends. Premiums have been projected to increase nationwide for the coming fiscal year due to inflation and a rise in post-COVID doctor visits. Photo by Cody Bjornson. Desiree Espada helps Benicio Cuevas light a sparkler in the Yunque Gallos baseball team dugout. Alpine ISD School Board signs resolution urging lawmakers to increase public education funding. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. The Alpine ISD Board of Trustees adopted a resolution this week in response to what it calls the state underfunding of rural public schools, outlining the district's various financial shortcomings and calling on the governor and the legislature to urgently address the matter. The resolution requests immediate financial assistance for cash-strapped rural districts in the form of teacher salary increases and a solution for property value disputes between the local appraisal district and the state comptroller, or controller, which can negatively impact a district's bottom line. Beyond those concerns, the resolution calls on state leaders to address the root causes of persistent underfunding of rural school districts. Alpine ISD Superintendent Dr. Michelle Reinhart said the document, while largely symbolic, includes specific recommendations the district hopes legislators will act on during ongoing and future special sessions, including one potentially dedicated solely to education this fall. The resolution is really in response to the session as a whole, but also the lack of movement in special sessions since then, said Reinhart. Local school district leaders recently voiced extreme disappointment with what they felt was a lack of support for public schools during the 88th legislature, which concluded in June. Despite a significant budget surplus and calls for more funding for Texas public schools, who are facing rising inflation costs and more, no significant funds were allocated. In June, the Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan, named a new Select Committee on Education, which is tasked with authoring a report, due mid-August, concerning educational opportunities, modernization of the assessment and accountability system, and staff support for the state's K-12 schools. Reinhart said she wanted the financial situation at Alpine ISD, which serves 950 students, to help inform that report. And while the district has a certain amount of local control to streamline costs and seek out grants, long-term legislative solutions are required. There are certain parts of this that we don't control locally, and we can't fix locally, said Reinhart. The only way to truly fix those issues is at the state level, and specifically for us, that's about fixing nuances of the funding formula that end up underfunding Alpine year over year. Over $10 billion in the state's general revenue fund remains, and with a full rainy day fund, both the first and second special sessions have placed an emphasis on providing tax relief for Texans. School districts are funded in part by local property taxes. State lawmakers are currently considering two main laws, HB1, which would enact a 16.2-cent tax rate reduction for school districts, and SB1, which would enact a 10-cent tax rate reduction, increase the homestead exemption to $100,000, and lower the automatic tax rate compression, plus two-year teacher pay increases. Districts under 20,000 students would receive $6,000 per full-time teacher. The potential tax cuts will not result in less money for districts, according to Bob Popinski, Senior Director of Policy with Raise Your Hand Texas, a nonprofit that supports public education. When you reduce your tax rate, it means the state has to pour more money in because the local school district is collecting less taxes, explains Popinski. But while state aid may grow to make up a larger portion of a school district's finances, it's been declining over the years, with Fort Davis and Marfa ISDs seeing 93 and 91% decreases in state funds, respectively. That doesn't equate to more money flowing into schools. Popinski explained that an increase in state aid will allow the district to break even after lost tax revenue. state share will go up above 50%. The problem is, it went above 50% without giving pay raises to teachers, without giving inflation adjustments to school districts to pay for fuel and utilities, said Popinski. Reinhart said she supports property tax relief and, in her experience, the state's increasing reliance on local property taxes to fund schools has led to tension. Town residents don't understand how property taxes can be so high while local schools suffer. Yes, locals are paying more, but they're paying more of the same total amount, and the state's just paying less. School district funding isn't increasing, said Reinhart. Alpine ISD, like other districts across the state, will spend remaining federal pandemic relief funds this year that help them stay afloat. A formula transition grant, which protects the district from unintended revenue loss as a result of 2019 legislation, will also expire this year. With those financial hits on the horizon, a total of $1.5 million, Reinhart said now was the time to push for legislation, given that lawmakers only meet every 2 years. The district will soon start a letter-writing campaign with the goal of sending 2,000 letters from Alpine to the Capitol. We can weather this next year as we've been weathering underfunding for years, but it's the 2024-2025 school year where some different changes come into play in the funding formula that just really set up an impossible situation for Alpine to sustain for multiple years after that. Another $1.2 million loss in funding last year, according to Reinhart, resulted from local county appraisal district and state comptroller property value disputes. By law, the state relies on the comptroller's property valuations to determine how much aid it allots to districts, while the districts themselves are required to tax residents based on the valuations of the local appraisal district. Those two valuations don't always line up. In Alpine's case, the comptroller's numbers are higher than the local appraisal district's, meaning the district is insufficiently funded by the state without the tax revenue to make up for it. The state pretends that we collect taxes on the comptroller's valuations, and there's no way we could because they're not valued at that locally, said Reinhart. Both Reinhart and Popinski argued the legislature was unbalanced in its focus this session on school vouchers. Controversial legislation supported by Governor Greg Abbott that would allow public funds, potentially $8,000 per student, to be spent on private school education. The legislature has budgeted a total of $500 million for the school voucher program, money which is coming out of the public education bucket. An earlier attempt during the regular session to push vouchers through resulted in HB 100, the primary education-related bill, not passing. Popinski said his organization would like to see real conversations about real issues in special sessions without attaching a voucher to every last policy issue. Raise Your Hand Texas is advocating for an increase in the basic allotment per student by $1,000, an automatic inflation adjustment to help continually support districts, and more. As it stands, vouchers are directly impacting everything, he said, including a potential increase in funding that helps support small to mid-sized schools like those in the Big Bend region. The Senate reduced a lot of the small and mid-sized allotment so that they could afford the $500 million for the voucher program, said Popinski. You can see how vouchers are playing into this, and it hurts rural and small school districts. But Penske and Reinhardt said they were concerned with the voucher program's lack of oversight, as well as the idea that public funds, typically diverted to public schools, would be funneled into private institutions without state rules, regulations, and requirements. We want to support our 5.5 million kids in public schools and nearly 400,000 teachers. They're the engine of the state, said Popinski. We've spent decades creating policies to shape our schools better, and to have a policy that says, all right, you can just take $8,000 per kid and go off to a private school or vendor without any of those policies attached to it, doesn't seem like it's the right policy for the state of Texas for a lot of different reasons. Big Bend National Park Superintendent Bob Krumenacher retires, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Big Bend National Park. Last Tuesday, Big Bend National Park Superintendent Bob Krumenacher turned in his keys, capping off 5 years of Big Bend leadership and 4 decades in the National Park Service. Deputy Superintendent Rick Goopman will serve in the interim while a formal search for new leadership begins. Krumenacher served through a period of growing pains for the park. During his time at Big Bend, there was a nearly 25% increase in visitation, leading to an all-time high visitor count of 581,000 in 2021. Managing all the new visitors has led to numerous improvement projects, including the renovation of the Chisos Basin Lodge. Through it all, Krumenacher kept his focus on what matters most to him, the protection of the landscape he's come to love. In the spring, a bill to expand park boundaries by 6,100 acres was filed by Congressman Tony Gonzalez. A 99-acre chunk on the northern edge of the park was also deemed eligible for federal wilderness designation. The fight for wilderness designation, which would prevent around two-thirds of the park from further development, requires a nod from Congress for federal recognition. I'm retiring from a great career in the National Park Service, but I'll stay connected to and actively contributing as a volunteer to some of the same causes, he said. Krumenacher first visited the park on a canoe trip through the lower canyons in 1982. He would later enjoy a starring role in Bravo y Grande, a 2019 documentary about some of the region's best boatmen enjoying the wild and rugged stretch of river. In commemoration of these memorable trips, Krumenacher spent his last day flying over the same route along the Rio Grande with the park's ranger pilot, Scott Taylor. Since that was my first Big Bend experience decades ago, as well as my first big trip as superintendent almost 5 years ago, it seems only fitting that it was also my last adventure as superintendent, he said. Deputy Superintendent Rick Goopman knows that he has big shoes to fill. Superintendent Krumenacher, or Bob, as we call him here at the Park HQ, is a force to be reckoned with, he said. He has a unique leadership style that is and will be hard to replicate. Bob always knew what to do without hesitation. Goopman said that his primary role in the coming months is straightforward, though far from easy. My primary role is to keep the boat afloat and sailing in the right direction, he said. What does that look like? Ensuring that the employees and community members here at Big Bend National Park believe us when we say that they are the most important resource here in the park. Though his time in the role won't last forever, Goopman says he's in the Big Bend for good. He bought a house in the Davis Mountains and has settled into the community, spending his free time volunteering at the Chihuahuan Desert Research Institute. Each park is different from the others, he said. The thing that many of us heard about Big Bend National Park when we were researching moving here was the sense of place and community. For now, he's excited about working with his team at Panther Junction. They are all impressive humans, and it is my very great pleasure to work with them, he said. Murillo, indicted on multiple counts of production and distribution of child sex abuse material. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Sonia Murillo, a 32-year-old Marfa resident, arrested in June for sexual exploitation of children, was indicted by a federal grand jury last week on 4 counts of production and 1 count of distribution of child sex abuse material. Murillo was arrested after investigators with the Texas Department of Public Safety, while conducting a forensic review of a cell phone from a different child pornography investigation in Marfa, discovered at least 8 saved Snapchat videos of Murillo performing sexual acts on a young child, according to the criminal complaint. The indictment states that in 2017, Murillo did knowingly employ, use, persuade, induce, entice, and coerce a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing any visual depiction of such conduct. The document also states that Murillo did so knowing or having reason to know that such visual depiction would be transported using any means. The indictment includes a notice of a demand for forfeiture of Murillo's property relating to the charges. Murillo will now either enter into a plea deal or go to trial. Bart Medley, Murillo's attorney, declined to comment on the news of the indictment. The U.S. Attorney's Office did not immediately return a request for comment. Murillo worked as a property manager and substitute teacher with Marfa ISD. She was previously in a romantic relationship with P.J. Serrano, 35, who was arrested in May for possession of child sex abuse material, a charge to which he recently pleaded not guilty. Murillo waived her right to a detention hearing last month and was ordered to be held without bond by Judge David Fannin. She is being held in the West Texas Detention Facility in Sierra Blanca. Murillo, indicted on multiple counts of production and distribution of child sex abuse material. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Sonia Murillo, a 32-year-old Marfa resident, arrested in June for sexual exploitation of children, was indicted by a federal grand jury last week on 4 counts of production and 1 count of distribution of child sex abuse material. Murillo was arrested after investigators with the Texas Department of Public Safety, while conducting a forensic review of a cell phone from a different child pornography investigation in Marfa, discovered at least 8 saved Snapchat videos of Murillo performing sexual acts on a young child, according to the criminal complaint. The indictment states that in 2017, Murillo did knowingly employ, use, persuade, induce, entice, and coerce a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing any visual depiction of such conduct. The document also states that Murillo did so knowing or having reason to know that such visual depiction would be transported using any means. The indictment includes a notice of a demand for forfeiture of Murillo's property relating to the charges. Murillo will now either enter into a plea deal or go to trial. Bart Medley, Murillo's attorney, declined to comment on the news of the indictment. The U.S. Attorney's Office did not immediately return a request for comment. Murillo worked as a property manager and substitute teacher with Marfa ISD. She was previously in a romantic relationship with P.J. Serrano, 35, who was arrested in May for possession of child sex abuse material, a charge to which he recently pleaded not guilty. Murillo waived her right to a detention hearing last month and was ordered to be held without bond by Judge David Fannin. She is being held in the West Texas Detention Facility in Sierra Blanca.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, July 6, 2023. FSISD Approves District Compensation Plan by Sean Yorks. Much of the money the Fort Stockton Independent School District, or any other district, spends every year goes to salaries, and the district approved the compensation plan for the 23-24 school year at its June 26th meeting. This is a big one for us every year because it's where the bulk of our money is spent, regardless of all the buses that you see and all the buildings that we have, said Superintendent Dr. Zamora. On a year-to-year basis, most of our money was spent in human capital, human resources, the cost and salary to pay our teachers and other support staff and administrators. Zamora reported that the entire district staff is receiving a salary increase for the upcoming year, including at-will employees. In addition to that, we're continuing with the Honest Day's Work Initiative, where the merit pay that will be dispersed in an amount that the directors and principals can then use to reward those that have performed at their best based on those evaluations. I don't know how long we can continue doing this, but for the second year in a row, I know times are tough, and I think it's an important thing to take care of our hourly employees because they do such important jobs for us. The salary scale has also seen an increase. Other things that are new, some pretty big pushes as far as our regular salary scale, moving all the way up from $52,000 to $55,000 starting salary for a zero-year teacher, and then it kind of trickles down because we were $52,000 for a zero-year, and we moved it over the $55,000, and that kind of impacts everybody kind of all the way. The district also made modifications to its zoned pay. This will be the first year for that. For the most part, the different rules are made public. In the past, that was something we kind of held a little close because we didn't want other districts to know exactly how we were doing it. I think the time has come that those other districts understand this is too late for them to try to implement this year anyway. Increases range from 3.5% to 4.5%. You can see we're doing the best as we would try, best as we said we would, to try to reward the personnel and continue to bring the best people we possibly can and retain them here in Fort Stockton. Salary schedules are designed to reward our teachers with certifications that have been deemed most valuable based on the state's accountability system. The system rewards non-certified teachers the faster they attain certification. It also influences teachers certified in non-zoned subjects to seek zone-eligible certifications most needed. That's the rationale. Why do we do it this way? Because the state has determined that these subject areas are the most important because that's where the bulk of our accountability comes from. We need our best people teaching in those subject areas, and that's why they're getting paid the most. Zamora said the district is $22,000 above state-based salary for a zero teacher and can be $35,000 above state-based for zoned teachers. Our salaries are significantly higher than anything that the state currently has set. The state minimum salary scale stops at year 20, and at year 20, I believe it's $54,560. So one out of our One of our zero-year teachers is starting higher than a senior 20-year teacher that the state is doing. The board recognized the campus leadership team of the year from Fort Stockton Intermediate School, the second straight year the intermediate school earned that honor. The team is determined by attendance percentage of students, the number of months at least four different times somebody from that campus leadership rode on a school bus to help, and how much it improved from the previous school year. All of these things are indicators of a campus leadership team that's doing something excellent. The competition was tight, and I really want to commend Apache for how close they came, and I also want to commend the middle school for being the most improved. Medina completes residency, stays in Fort Stockton. When most new physicians complete their residency, they move on to bigger and better things. After completing his residency at Pecos County Memorial Hospital, Dr. Christian Medina discovered at PCMH and Fort Stockton was the best thing for his family. We decided to stay in Fort Stockton following the completion of my residency as we fell in love with the community, he said. Here I spent the last 3 years training alongside my wife Diana and our son Mikhail, and eventually welcomed our second son, Yeshua, at PCMH Hospital. Medina grew up in Laredo and earned his bachelor's degree in biology with a certificate in international leadership from Texas A&M International. Dr. Medina went on to earn his Doctor of Medicine degree at American University of the Caribbean School of Medicine and completed the requirements in August 2019. After graduation, he decided to pursue family medicine with obstetrics as his desired specialty. He worked in Miami, Ohio, and Chicago to finish up his last 2 years of medical school before starting his residency, initially in Odessa, as part of the Rural Track Initiative. He was in Odessa for a year and Fort Stockton for 2 years. I matched at Texas Tech University Health Science Center in the Odessa and Fort Stockton Rural Medicine Track. The opportunity that the program gave me, it gave me the ability to learn a lot of skills that I didn't expect to learn during residency. Among other procedures, Medina learned vasectomies, colonoscopies, and endoscopies. The staff here is amazing, he said. My wife and I were very comfortable with Fort Stockton. We ultimately decided to stick around and raise our family. The community really needs a lot of help in regard to trained medical professionals, and that's really one of the reasons why I decided to go into the rural track. Because of the lack of resources in some of these rural communities and opportunities that can allow me to grow. I got that coming to Fort Stockton. Property tax relief and teacher pay raises pass Texas Senate. On the first day of the second called special session of the 88th Texas Legislature, the Texas Senate approved Senate Bill 1 and Senate Joint Resolution 1, co-authored by Senator Cesar Blanco. The bill and resolution provide $18 billion in property tax relief and $3.2 billion to increase salaries for public school teachers across Texas. El Paso and West Texas families are struggling with skyrocketing local property taxes. It's the number one complaint I hear from working families and homeowners. That's why I'm proud to co-author and help pass SB1 and SJR1 to provide homeowners with the largest property tax cut in Texas history. Under this bill, homeowners will see an average of $1,200 to $1,400 in lasting property tax relief. That's real money back in the pockets of hard-working families and homeowners. We need to get this done. Senate Bill 1 will raise the homestead exemption from $40,000 to $100,000 for homeowners. There are approximately 60,000 homes in El Paso and West Texas that could pay $0 in local school taxes with the new $100,000 homestead exemption. Additionally, SB1 and SJR1 will allocate $12 billion to pay down local school district taxes and provide nearly $5 million for local school districts in Senate District 29. This bill will double the franchise tax exemption, effectively eliminating the state's franchise tax for over 67,000 small businesses. Senator Blanco also joint-authored an amendment added to SJR 1 to provide a one-time supplemental payment of $2,000 for every full-time Texas public school teacher. If a teacher teaches in a small or rural district with less than 20,000 students, they will receive a one-time supplemental payment of $6,000 to help close the salary gap between urban and rural teachers. Senator Blanco previously co-authored legislation to provide a $15,000 pay raise across the board for every full-time public school teacher. He also added, "Teachers are the backbone of our public schools, but for years teachers have been asked to do more with less." According to the National Education Association, Texas ranks 26th in teacher pay, paying $7,500 below the national average. While teachers deserve far more than these modest raises, doing nothing is not an option. This bill is a step in the right direction to help address the teacher shortages in rural and underserved communities by attracting and retaining teachers with better pay. Both bills now go to the House for approval. Madrid represents Fort Stockton at Rotary International Convention. From a small oasis in the West Texas desert to a towering skyscraper of one of the world's most livable cities, Andres Madrid has seen it all. He recently completed a whirlwind trip to Melbourne, Australia, to represent Fort Stockton at the 2023 Rotary International Convention. Madrid is the incoming president of the Fort Stockton Rotary Club. He talked about his trip down under at the June 29th club lunch meeting at the First Presbyterian Church, showing TikTok videos he shot while in Australia. "This has been a fun process in the TikTok world because I wanted to capture as much as I could," he said, adding that he wanted to post the process of his journey to Melbourne, learn about Australia, learn about Rotary, and showcase the energy and people at the international convention. "At the end of the day, I'm coming back with what I believe is the Rotary's message for next year, which is hope. Rotary provides hope to the world in the things that we do, and I think that for me, that was what was interesting. Putting this TikTok stories was a way to show others what we experienced, the connections among each other, the moment you put on that Rotary pin." Madrid said the flight took 15 hours, and while summer was just getting started in Fort Stockton, it was winter in Australia. "It was really neat getting there and trying to connect with people. Walking into the convention, I'm by myself, and yet everybody there's with a big smile," adding that about 15,000 people attended the convention. "The energy that you feel in this place was just amazing. Everybody was happy." The message for this year leading into the 24 convention in Singapore is mental health. "After COVID, we all know the importance of mental health. It's something we need to pay attention to, but beyond that conversation, we really need to follow up with an action plan to find those connections, to find those sources." Rotary International President Gordon McNally explained that he's asking members to make mental health a priority. When his only brother took his own life, McNally said he became determined to fight the stigma around mental health issues and expand access to care. Madrid said the trip to the International Convention was important to him, and he hopes other Rotarians in Fort Stockton have the chance to travel to future conventions. "Rotary is us. The people is what makes Rotary. This is definitely a trip to remember for me, but I think the concept is one that I hope to continue," adding that he connected with people who have been attending the convention for more than 50 years. Your guide to local places to go and things to do. July 8th, Fort Stockton Volunteer Fire Department Bike Rodeo and Fill the Boot at James Rooney Park, pit number four. Free bikes while supplies last, free kids' helmets while supplies last, bike safety education and inspections, fit kids' firefighter training, and a watermelon eating contest, 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The Imperial Public Library will again present a summer reading program on July 26th. All age groups are encouraged to read and enjoy the many benefits of the library over the summer. The theme for this year is All Together Now. The program is every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to noon, starting June 21st and ending July 26th. For more information, call 536-2236. The 87th Water Carnival at the Comanche Springs Pool will be July 13th through the 15th. This year's show, Weekend at the Fort, is directed by Kelly Wiest and Katie Salmon. July 14th, Live at Zero Stone with Marcus Mendoza, Jr., presented by the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce and sponsored by Lancium. Free admission. July 15th, the Lila Smith Safe House Rummage Sale begins at 8 a.m. at the First Baptist Church. Large indoor rummage sale to generate funding for nonprofit programs at the Lila Smith Safe House. And July 17th to 20th, a soccer camp for boys. And
hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, June 29th.
Register before July 14th. Each child gets a free jersey, daily snacks, and drinks. Children will learn dribbling, kicking, trapping, and positions, sportsmanship, and life lessons. For registration forms and more information, call the First Baptist Church at 336-3307.
Fireworks, jail, top commissioner's court. This story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioner's Court met Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. in the county courthouse for a regularly scheduled meeting. The pledges and invocation opened the meeting, and a quorum was established. A clarification of the fireworks limitations for this coming 4th of July was the lead item on the agenda. Quote, fireworks are not banned, only sticks and fins, which are aerial fireworks. Also, it was mistakenly reported that the Coliseum parking lot could be used by the public for popping fireworks. This is not the case, because the arena now covers the old parking lot. There really isn't any place to set off fireworks out at the Coliseum anymore, Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. The concern is the fire danger because of the extreme heat and dryness of the last few weeks. End quote. Ward County is under the normal burn ban statute, which does not prohibit the burning of household trash in containers covered by metal grating, outdoor cooking, or burning in metal pits and grills, including the burning of wood for such purpose, or other outdoor burning activities as permitted by the Ward County Fire Marshal, Billy Riley. TNT Fireworks Area Manager Spencer McMillan spoke to the court on behalf of the TNT Fireworks Stand operators. Quote, all of our stands are operated under the Texas state laws regulating the sale of fireworks. If it is prohibited, we don't sell it. TNT stands abreast of the laws and is very conscientious of abiding by them, McMillan told the court. We want to encourage our county residents to be as cautious and safe as possible with the fireworks and dry conditions. Let's have a safe and fun 4th of July holiday, Holly said. Sean Butler and Shay Ryan with Butler Cohen Design Plus Build were at the Monday morning meeting to address the court. Butler Cohen is a construction management at risk service, meaning they are the go-between for the new jail construction. They will consult with Burns Architectural Firm and contractors to determine the project cost, which then will be presented to the commissioners to decide on moving forward with the new jail project. Quote, "We have major experience in our field and have worked with Kenny Burns on several projects. We will consult with our contractors for the most cost-efficient solutions possible," said Sean Butler. The commissioners gave approval for Butler Cohen to receive a $35,000 flat rate starting fee and 4% of the project cost as their payment on the completion of the jail. In other business, the commissioners approved paying the county bills. In other regular business, commissioners approved the last meeting's minutes, the Ward Memorial Hospital budget amendments, the officer's report, and the treasurer's report. Present for the meeting was Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled commissioners' meeting will be July 10th at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen Street. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioner's meeting. Lowe's employee arrested for pocketing $16,000 in returns. Bean charged with stealing motorcycle parts. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Two Monahan's women found themselves behind bars last week, facing felony theft charges. 21-year-old Yandan Urita of 2115 West 3rd Street and 43-year-old Christina Deanna Bean of 110 Nevada are both charged with theft of property more than $2,500, less than $30,000, a state jail felony. Urita was arrested and charged after her employer, Lowe's Marketplace, discovered incidents of theft that totaled approximately $16,000. On Monday, April 19th, a Monahan's police officer responded to Lowe's Marketplace in response to a reported theft. The officer spoke with a loss prevention officer who said Urita had been caught stealing money from the grocery store. According to Monahan's Police Department Captain Stormy Laws, quote, "Loss prevention said Urita was making cash returns and pocketing the money. Urita worked in the store for over 3 years, and the theft had apparently had been going on for some time, but the store only became aware of the theft on April 18th after a return was processed for approximately $600. Quote, "The store provided receipts and surveillance footage of the theft, and based on those, officers were able to obtain a warrant for Urita's arrest," Law said. Urita was subsequently arrested on June 14th and taken to Ward County Jail, and her bond was set at $8,000. She posted the bond and was released. Urita has since been relieved of her duties at the grocery store. Bean was arrested by Ward County Sheriff's deputies after they received a report of the theft on May 24th. Deputies were called to the 100 block of Nevada by the victim in reference to stolen motorcycle parts. Quote, "The victim told deputies he allowed Bean to store items in a storage shed behind the home, and when Bean returned to retrieve her items, she also took a motorcycle exhaust, digital battery charger, and 4 battery tenders," Ward County Chief Deputy Michael Franco said. In all, the stolen items were valued at $5,700. A warrant for Bean was issued, and she was subsequently arrested on June 17th. Her bond was set at $7,500, and she posted the bond and was released. If convicted, Both women are facing imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 2 years or less than 180 days, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Council appoints Stava to fill District 1. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan City Council members voted unanimously Tuesday to appoint Gerald Stava to fill a vacancy created with the recent passing of District 1 Councilmember Rudy Hernandez. The seat has been left unoccupied since Hernandez's passing on April 28. Hernandez was appointed to the seat on September 11, 2012, where he served 11 years. The council appointed Hernandez to the post after the passing of longtime councilwoman Mary Garcia. Council members opted to fill Hernandez's unexpired term, which ends May 2024, by appointment, and have met in executive session 3 times to discuss the appointment, all resulting in no action before the announcement was made on Tuesday after the group met again in executive session. Quote, Stava's appointment is subject to his acceptance, and if he chooses remain as council member, he will need to be elected to the seat next May, City Manager Rex Thee said. Any citizens who live within District 1 and want to run for the position can do so by filing for the seat beginning January 17th. Candidates must be a U.S. citizen, a resident of Monahans, qualified to vote, be a bona fide taxpayer, and cannot hold another public office or employment. In first readings, council members approved repealing Ordinance 1157, which closed the 700 block of North Carroll Street next to Sudirth Elementary to traffic in order to allow school buses to pick up and drop off kids. The ordinance was adopted March 27, 2012. Quote, Sudirth Elementary has been permanently closed, and the school informed us they are fine with the ordinance being lifted and the street being open, and to do that, we have to repeal the previous ordinance, Thee said. If approved upon second reading, city crews will be allowed to remove any signs and street markings, but the street will remain a school zone, he added. In other business, members approved a right-of-way easement agreement with Quick Trip. The Tulsa-based convenience store is set to build a new store in the 1900 block of South Stockton. The agreement will allow Quick Trip to install a private sewer line and 2 clean-out valves in the alley between McDonald's and the Quick Trip location, which will hook into the existing sewer. Quote, with the sewer running out to Stockton, it was not viable for the company, so we were able to come up with a right-of-way plan which works better for them and the city. Quick Trip will pay the city $1,200 for the easement and will maintain and make any necessary repairs to the sewer line. In routine matters, the May accounts payable was approved by the council, totaling $814,000. Aside from the usual expenses, such as payroll and fuel, other items on the list were a payment of $13,000 was paid to Casco Industries Incorporated for bunker gear for the volunteer fire department. Premier Waterworks was paid $5,900 for annual restock water meters. A payment of $4,500 was paid to Hart InterCivic Incorporated for ballots. BSN Sports was paid $5,900 for soccer goals at Duffy Park to allow teams to conduct practices. The May monthly departmental reports and minutes were also approved by the City Council. The Council will meet again on July 11th in the Council Chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in the story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. Presidio woman killed in Sunday crash. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Ana Gabriela Galindo, age 35, of Presidio, was killed in a two-vehicle wreck on FM 1776 and South Highway 18 on Sunday, June 25th, around 12:45 p.m. According to Stephen Blanco, sergeant with the Texas Department of Public Safety, Galindo was driving a 2015 Nissan Sentra and was stopped at a stop sign at FM 1776, intending to turn north onto State Highway 18, while Juanita Acosta Brandenburg, age 52, of Grand Falls, was traveling southbound on State Highway 18 in a 2018 Toyota 4Runner, approaching the intersection with FM 1776. It was determined Galindo failed to yield the right-of-way to Brandenburg and entered the intersection, striking Brandenburg's vehicle. Members of the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department were called to the scene to extract Galindo from her vehicle. She was pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace Danny Bustos. Galindo had three minor passengers in the vehicle, ages 16, 13, and 8, of Presidio, all of which were wearing their seatbelts at the time of the crash. Brandenburg and the minor children were all transported to Ward Memorial Hospital to be treated and were reported to be in stable condition. Weather conditions were clear and dry at the time of the crash. Trooper Adrian Valenzuela of Monahans investigated the accident. RV, three cars destroyed in fire. A fire reported last Thursday afternoon around 4 p.m. in the alley across from Alberta Allen Park was fully involved when the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department arrived on the scene. A utility pole and electrical box on the pole received major damage. An RV and three vehicles also received extensive damage. Suspected probable cause of the fire was reported by an eyewitness who saw sparks coming from an extension cord connected to another RV parked in the neighboring lot. The electrical cord ran across the lot where the fire was located. Extreme dry grass conditions contributed to the rapid spread of the fire. No injuries were reported.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.